Well, good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable on this Wednesday, the 16th of January. A lot going on, but we'll talk about it all. We'll work through it. We just heard Rufus Wainwright, and we'll be hearing Rufus Wainwright throughout our morning this morning, doing our bumper music. Rufus is going to be at the Egg in Albany on Friday night, and you can find out more by going to theegg.org, perhaps one of the coolest URLs.
He is so lovely to see live in performance.
Theegg.org, Rufus Wainwright. All right. Let me introduce everybody. Watch your coffee there. There you go. Let me introduce everybody to you, and then we will get started, and then hilarity will ensue. Terry Gibson is here. He is a communications professor at SUNY New Paltz. He's a former New York State senator. Good morning, Terry. How are you?
Thanks. It's great to be back.
Wonderful to have you here. Doesn't he look like a senator?
He does.
He just looks like.
I would say he looks like a professor.
Yeah, a professor.
Well, he also looks like Mitt Romney.
There's a Mitt factor there.
Will you ever run again?
You never know. You just never know.
That means yes.
Keep all options open.
You never know.
For all
yes.
things
you
in
sound
life.
Like
you never
Sherrod
shut
Brown.
A door.
All right. Rosemary Armeo is here. We're excited. She is an investigative journalist and is stationed in Amman, Jordan, but is back on a break and is with us for, today and then
days.
Two more days.
Yeah.
And then, but we loved having you here.
Thank
and
you.
We
it's
love
been
having you
so
here.
Fun.
So welcome back. Thank you. And Jen Smith is with us. She is a wonderful reporter for the Berkshire Eagle, and we are thrilled whenever she comes, which is every Wednesday. Check your calendars. Today is Wednesday, and she is here. Good morning.
Good morning.
What else happens on Wednesday?
well, we don't know about that officially yet.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. but we'll get to that in a second, I hope. Anyway, I would like to... Oh, and Alan, welcome. Good morning. Hi, how are you? Hey.
I had my orange just now. It made me feel good, like Popeye with spinach.
Oh, good.
No scurvy in this studio.
No.
Let us begin. There is a lot to talk about, and what a day yesterday, and boy, as my mother, or I guess it was my father who used to say, boy, you think we have troubles. Brexit, my goodness. Let's talk about what happened in the United Kingdom yesterday. Not so united, are they? And this was the question. I think we had talked about this at some length, but the question was never really if this was going to pass or not. The question was going to be what the margin would be, and it turned out to be a crushing vote, just a 432-202, and this is Theresa May's defeat of her plan to withdraw Britain from the European Union. Now,
of how to do it.
So this is the plan of how to do it, not whether they're going to do it. That's already been decided by the people. How you're going to do it. Now, now we don't know what's going to happen. One of five things can happen, from my understanding, right? Mm-hmm. So, and they include most drastically. Now, remember, it's only 6 weeks away of what the deadline is. So the most drastic, of course, is a no-deal Brexit, where they just go and nobody knows what the hell's going to happen.
And chaos ensues.
Right. Well, all of these seem to have some form of chaos mm-hmm. attached to them.
Just a
right?
matter of how much control you have.
Theresa May will go to the EU, try to renegotiate, or will try to call for an election to try to bolster support amongst her party so it could pass.
And yeah, that worked so well last time.
A, it didn't work well last time, and B, the time frame to make that happen is very slight.
But she will survive the vote of confidence tonight.
And then there's the vote of no confidence.
Well, that she's going to survive,
and she'll
they've
survive.
Already counted the votes.
Yes. So,
No, I think she will. I'm shaking my head because the Parliament reminds me of our Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, England so needs and has needed for the past 2 years a real leader, someone who's going to take a drastic new step. And the Brits have an opportunity, we don't, which is for a redo. That election was as tainted as our own. It was influenced by the Russians. Vladimir Putin is breaking out the champagne today. And yeah. they have a chance to go back and redo the whole thing. I do not understand why May, who was not a fan of Brexit, mm-hmm. is insisting that the vote was made, democracy mm-hmm. will die if we can mm-hmm. go back and have a redo. Mm-hmm. I sure wish we could have one.
So the parliament could intervene.
Good point.
And then you would either have a no confidence vote, a second referendum, which is Alan mentioned is not going to happen. Well, it could happen, but it probably won't pass.
She's resisting. Yeah.
Second referendum.
I think if they have the next vote, the do-over, it will pass. That's
meaning,
what I think.
Meaning that if they go
words,
back.
If they say, yes, that's right, Joe, I'm sorry.
I'm confused.
They'll say, if in fact there's a second vote, not to leave. They'll vote not to leave.
I mean, the people of
yes.
of
they're
Great
calling
Britain.
It. They're trying to put a face on it by calling it the people's vote.
Now, and that, as the New York Times refers to it. By the way, the New York Times has a great graph of trying to. I tried to read it four times, figuring out what the options were, and then finally, thank goodness, the New York Times drew me pictures, and I it's much better after that. So she can throw a Hail Mary, which would either mean the general election, which the chances of that are slim to none. Mm. And then the second referendum, which she has said that she wouldn't do, but that was, of course, before all of this happened. There is still the possibility of going to the EU, begging them for new concessions or postponing it. And I don't really know what that would do either. But.
And I was listening to the BBC this morning early, and they had all these guys on from the other countries and the European Union, they all said, no, we're not going to do that. And why would we give them more time to do what? We won't do that. No, I think that they're between a rock and a hard place. But I do have a question for the panel while we're discussing this. And that is, panel, what do you think of the idea that it led NPR News this morning? This story was the number one story on NPR News.
Top story.
And here we chose it as the number one story. And yet, our government is in chaos. It is shut down. The Attorney General, the presumptive Attorney General of the United States, testified yesterday, putting a football field between him and the President of the United States, which I found to be very interesting. So we've got a few chickens to fry, sorry, vegetarians, around here that are very different from this small nation. And one other thing about England, about Great Britain, and that is that they are. I don't think they have. That they have a big Irish problem. The island of Ireland has a demarcation line in it, mm-hmm. and the troubles were horrible. And this could lead back to the troubles if a hard border exists there. So I'm
interested. And that's what everyone was trying to avoid with these negotiations,
sure.
is bringing it back to that era and having a physical demarcation.
Yeah. I think, but as far as the validity of, I know
of doing it as a number one story.
Yeah, and I think. In Rosemary.
Nothing personal.
No, I understand. Because it's an interesting, but it is one of the great powers that is.
Yeah, it isn't Great Britain. We're talking about all of a united Western
Europe.
That's
right.
What's represented here, and that's why Putin is dancing in the streets. Mm-hmm. He's got Europe in chaos. He's got the U.S. in chaos. He's got Eastern mm-hmm. Europe falling back into the realm. The world is going his way, despite his shaky economy, all the other excuses you want to give me. It's going the way he wants.
And I think that's the perspective that you really should look at in the context. Yes, the UK is one of our great allies, and that's important too. But I think it's the domino effect that it creates, which is pandering right into the hands of one of our adversaries.
And let us not forget that this is not a new or a short-term phenomenon. For 2 years, the way we have been totally engrossed in Trump, Britain and most of Europe has been engrossed in Brexit. David Cameron should rot in hell for what he's done. He's mm-hmm. worse than Trump. This was all unnecessary. Didn't even have to have this resolution. A non-binding resolution is now a test of democracy. Yeah, he thought, just like May, when she had the first election, she thought she would bolster her strength,
right.
and instead she got this big surprise. So I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I don't mean
no.
to hog the conversation.
No, right.
I just have this sense of doom, and I think Brexit is a big part of it. It was a It preceded the vote here in 2016. It is a piece with it. It's part of what's happening in Eastern Europe, where, which is getting
of what was to come.
Absolutely. Yeah.
We know that now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up on what Alan had said before, and I think the reason that most of the news outlets led with this story this morning is because I think they sense that for the American public there's sort of a Trump shutdown burnout in terms of the news cycle, and that it is sort of an interesting break to take a look at how chaos is being dealt with in other countries, one that is such a close ally to us. And we know that the outcome of this whole Brexit deal has huge implications on our own economy and on the stability of the world. And as was mentioned by Rosemary, that Putin is just dancing in the streets every day, that everything, both in our country and
Middle East,
around the world, is going his way.
He doesn't have one hot spot right now, not one.
Don't get me wrong. I would have covered the story today, but I don't know that I would have done it number one.
There is so many choices of what to cover.
Well, but this country is in chaos.
It is in chaos, and
and it seems to me that say, oh, that again, is not the answer. We just have to keep looking at this. We're going to have a women's march. We're going to have on Saturday, I guess. That's something. But this is really an extraordinary downtime for this country. Maybe the worst president we've ever faced ever.
Well, in both the UK and here in the United States, you do have some similarities in that you have two governments that are at the current moment.
Sorry,
are we going to the races now?
Time.
I don't have a bet in this game.
Wow, I'm awake.
I'm going to turn mine off.
Yeah.
I was just saying that, I don't remember what I was saying now.
I'm sorry. Post time.
Oh, I know what I was saying. It was that the similarities that you, in both cases, you have governments that are unable to really respond to the people right now, for whatever reason, for very different reasons. But you have two governments that are basically just stuck at the moment in both the UK and the United States. And here in the United States, it is terrifying. And I grow more and more worried every day that this has become the new normal and that Trump has no real motivation to end this shutdown.
Well, speak to what the people want. Let's address that first. The real problem in both countries and in the rest of the world is that there is a very divided population. Mm-hmm. And what they want is extremely different, could not be more different. We can't even talk to each other. And there is not a strong enough leader who is saying we have to work through the differences. We just have a bunch of, whiny WAMC listeners are saying, oh, just give us, we're not speaking to each other. We're not telling them what we want. And then number two, there's not a leader. And then number three, there is in both places. They are the victims. We, the Brits and the Americans, were victim of a concerted Russian campaign to influence our election. Please let us not overlook that. Mm-hmm. We didn't do this on our own.
Yeah, I got to agree with you 100% on that. And the lack of leadership right now, both in our country and in theirs, is really showing. And it's at a time where you do have this division amongst the public that you really do need a strong leader to step in and say, this is the way we're going to go. And we don't have that person right now, not at any level of government that I can find right now.
And I think if you look in the global context of what's going on, I think, the public deserves from the media a global context to understand. I think it's easy to be myopic and just see what's happening in your own neck of the woods, but not understanding how all these powers at play throughout the world can affect our daily lives, but we won't see it until it's right in front of us.
Right.
So we really have to take that overhead view and really understand how this all affects our politics, our policies, and our livelihoods.
Well, it's right in front of us right now. You know, our food is not being inspected the way it used to be. Our skies are not being looked over the way they used to be. Everything that we expect government to do is not being done to the level that we think it should be done to. Our safety is in jeopardy.
So now I'm confused because the way that I was polling the panel, I had seen it as sort of 4-1. I thought that Brexit is important, but not as important as what's the hell that you're just describing that is going on in this country. And I would bet that if you poll the American people and said, here are four stories or two stories. What should lead the news?
So which of our U.S. chaos would you lead with?
Well, I would lead with all of it. I mean, the day you say, as we just heard, that this is the new normal and, it's just so boring and we don't want to talk about the fact that the skies are not being inspected or that the planes aren't being inspected or that the TSA, which Rosemary and I disagree about, is not doing its job. I think that the British situation is terrible, all right, and terrible for them, but I don't think it rises to what's going on in this country and the terror of this president.
Well, it's just useful to look at what can happen in another country when chaos reigns without leadership. I mean, there in the UK, they're talking about preparing for food shortages, for preparing for shortages of medical supplies. And if you look at our country down the road, we may be doing the same thing if we don't get our act together.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about other stuff. We all have letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we will continue our conversation after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, and it is 9:35. Coming up, just a programming note, coming up at 10:40 this morning, fresh off of his State of the State address and budget address, Governor Andrew Cuomo will talk to Alan from 10:40 to 11 o'clock this morning. So we will be so stay tuned for that, and that'll be coming up. Now, we have letters from people about the stories that we have been talking about, and in fact, we just got a new crop of them, so I'll add that to the pile, and here we go.
I like it.
Okay, and Bill checks in and says, thank you. Thank you for questioning what is important. The William P. Barr confirmation hearing, in my opinion, is first up in importance. NPR did not lead with this either. No, I actually said that. I said NPR led with Brexit, and I questioned that, as I often do about NPR. All right, thank you for that. And Ted says, what about Sherrod Brown with Kamala Harris as VP? Brown would obviously win Ohio and most likely lots of other swing states. As a hint, research his award-winning journalist wife as a Trump nightmare. I believe this would be a dream team that would not only check all the boxes, but be a solid Democratic offering that would blow Trump and his racist followers out of the water and out of the presidency. Thank you, Ted in Clifton Park.
I like Sherrod Brown very much, and his wife, Connie, who I know from Cleveland. She's
is that Connie
awesome.
Brown?
Connie Schultz. Okay, okay. And in fact, the conservatives are already targeting her. But he's being very shrewd. He's going to be on a tour to extol the dignity of labor. So all the news hosts are saying, does that mean you're running? Look at these states you're going to. They're all the first states that are going to vote in the primary. So you must be running, right? He goes, labor has a lot of dignity. He just keeps saying that over and over again. And I'm not sure if I prefer that or Kirsten Gillibrand, who goes on the Colbert Show and instead of
funny?
Telling a joke, says she's running for president.
What? For those of you who are not watching the video of this, Rosemary just made a contorted face while she was telling the story of these potential candidates. Okay.
The Gillibrand thing was, to your point, Rosemary, I just thought this is your, first of all, you have a left to center crowd. Yep. You have the number one evening show. You have chosen this as your venue to announce your candidacy. You would think it would be something interesting, and I maybe that's unfair. I don't know, but it certainly didn't. To me, the only thing that was funny about the entire segment, and let us just remember this is a comedy show. The only thing that was funny is that as a parting gift, Stephen Colbert gave her a plane ticket to Michigan. That was funny. Other than that, I don't know.
Look, I've interviewed her. She's somebody who is, of course, you know, you go up to somebody, Roselle will frequently look at me in the restaurant and say, I think that's somebody over there. Well, that's a somebody. She's a somebody. I don't see her as a presidential candidate. I just don't. I think she's kind of light on that. But remember, this is a woman who can transform herself at a moment's notice. When she was a congresswoman from upstate New York, I emphasize that, she slept with a gun under her bed. And that she was not too good when it came to some of the great social issues of our time. When questioned, when D'Amato, remember D'Amato, and Schumer introduced her, D'Amato said, well, she'll evolve. So, well, she'll
evolve.
That
was a great impression.
And she did it well. Well, D'Amato is an easy guy to do that. His most famous utterance, of course, was when somebody asked him once whether why he had changed his opinion. He said, that was then and this is now. And I have used that 10,000 times. Anyway, I just don't see it, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I think it's good to have choices right now. I mean, she certainly has the credibility to be able to step forward and try this out, but she's not going to be alone. I think the American people need as many choices as possible right now. We need to see who generates the excitement.
Well, and they need a strong voice. I mean, whoever is taking on this role is going to inherit a lot, a lot of challenges, a lot of BS to sift through, and you need someone who's got an eye and a mind for all of that. And I think that the challenge is that right now you just see these candidates who have their little bases, and you know, what will that do to the Democratic nomination overall? And are people going to say, well, this is just someone who's playing to this platform, or is this someone who's really ready to take on what's at hand? It's great to have your ideals, but let's look at face value of what you're inheriting.
And it's also really challenging to go out there and launch a presidential campaign in the midst of a government being shut down.
Mm-hmm. Cuomo about the governor about her, she said, well, he said it's good she's doing it in Troy. I don't know what to make of that. But remember, I don't think Cuomo is out of it by any means. I know he has said he's out of it, but I think, you know, he may be angling to be the vice presidential candidate with Biden, and two New Yorkers would not play, couldn't do that.
I think I don't want to put her down, and I admire her as a politician. Many of the things you cited as, you know, she's a changeling, I think she needed to, and it's good that she evolved from as an upstate New York representative to a player on the national stage. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of her, and she's smart to do it. She may be running for president for the same reason we all thought Trump was, to increase her national standing. She may not win. She may not end up as a presidential or vice presidential candidate, but she will be a national, perhaps, a word, a name after that. And so good for her.
Well,
she's good in the Senate. I actually hope that, you know, for the same reason I'd like Elizabeth Warren, I'm ambivalent about her. Mm-hmm. I'm glad that there are women running for president. That used to be a headline right there. Mm-hmm. And now we haven't even mentioned her gender. Good. Mm-hmm. Go Kirsten.
Kirsten.
I better get her name right.
I admire you for saying that. Richard says, Brexit. I agree with the panel. Yellow jackets, Brexit, Trump and NATO, Ukraine, all point to Russia. Rich in Amherst. Well, that's really, we have to give credit to Rosemary for starting us on that particular road, Russian road. She's right, of course. Clay says, was there Russian involvement in the Brexit referendum? We think there was, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. There's been criminal studies looking into it, and it's been affirmed. And pretty much many of the things that people prompted people to vote in favor of leaving have proved to be untrue. That money could go, instead of going to the EU, it would go to health. No, that's not going to happen. No, refugees are not going to be. You can't. There's no deal in which you can get rid of refugees and still have trade agreements. And that was a big promise. They were lied to. In the same way that many Americans were lied to about Hillary and what Trump represented.
I think there are 34 or 35 candidates now who have declared interest in the presidency. That's a lot.
But he's looking.
Melinda says, the world. Seems to me the world is in a downturn, in quotes, everywhere, all around the globe.
Doom.
And Kevin, our friend Kevin, who writes us, news stories, priorities. Another example of New York Times and prioritizing stories. Kirsten Gillibrand's announcement that she was running for president was followed by a story about two gay penguins raising a chick together. That's where we are. And Bobby says,
I don't know about you, but given those two options,
yeah, which one
I think I'd go with the penguins. Right? That's pretty interesting.
Joe like Donahue. You can write
I'd like to hear more
Joe
about that.
Yeah, that's absolutely
that
right.
Out,
out of those two, I'd go with that.
Yeah. Okay. And Bobby says, Gillibrand, please don't run for president. Good morning, panel. If Kirsten Gillibrand is listening right now, please don't run for president. I can literally think of 10 Democrats I would gladly vote for besides her. All right. And then Kevin says, from Melrose, I read a report in the Washington Post that suggested Mueller could be leaving certain parts facts that normally may not be in the indictments. Your thoughts? You guys are my calm through this storm. Keep up the great work and donate to the Lockbox. You know, Joe, we haven't mentioned that, but it's the Lockbox total is growing. We need about $92,000 to get there. And if everybody would put something in, and we're over 400,000 by a lot now, but we need your help. Otherwise, we won't make it. Please do it. Okay. So thank you for reminding us about that, Kevin. And that's WAMC.org would be the place to do that. And Elizabeth says, divided population. To Rosemary's point that the American population is hopelessly divided, I would argue that the tragic irony is that these people are actually united in their deep sense of frustration and outrage at the inequality that has been on the rise for 30 years. We have all been manipulated into a perception that the enemy is each other, either because of race or belief system. Divide and conquer is a time-tested technique of the oligarchy. And that's from Elizabeth. And that's what I got, Joe.
All right. Let us take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We'll go through some other topics. A reminder, Governor Andrew Cuomo speaking with Alan Charta coming up at 10:40 this morning. We'll be right back after the short break.
The drummers and jugglers of Montreal don't even exist at all. So I'm tearing up these tarragas and Venetian clowns, antique shops and alcoholic homosexuals.
Thank you very much. Welcome back to the program. Rufus Wainwright bringing us in and out of the program this morning. He'll be at the Egg in Albany on Friday night. TheEgg.org. For more information, theegg.org. Speaking of eggs, let's talk about chickens. Just joking. Okay, so let's...
chickens?
we have letters. Let's go.
We do. Mark says, shameful. Stop blaming the president.
Oh, gosh.
It's all elected officials, Republicans and Democrats. Members of the Congress can't even agree on what day of the week it is. This partisan behavior did not just begin in the last 2 years, but has been ongoing long before Trump. Blaming one side over another makes matters worse. In fact, it's this exact behavior from our elected officials that resulted in Trump. It can easily happen again. People should be protesting all members of Congress to do their job.
Okay.
I just don't see, it's a good argument. I just don't see any reason not to blame Trump. He planned it.
He's the leader.
He set up a deal and then rejected it. He listened to right-wing radio and then said, I own it. I'm proud to do it. It is Trump's fault.
Well, you know, I personally blame Trump, but I'm not sure that the blame strategy is going to be one that's going to bring an end to this very severe crisis that we're
right.
in. I saw in the New York Times article this morning, or it might have been the Washington Post, that Nancy Pelosi started off the meeting with her caucus, I think yesterday, citing a Quinnipiac, is it Quinnipiac?
Quinnipiac
poll showing that the majority of Americans blame Donald Trump for the shutdown. That's good to know, but I'm not sure how to utilize that information in terms of actually solving the problem. Mm-hmm. So I worry about this blame game actually just dragging us deeper into an unsafe situation.
I guess I don't agree with that, surprisingly. I think he has to be blamed because I think he's doing it, as Rosemary has suggested, to divide and conquer. This is an age-old methodology of the oligarchs and the others doing this kind of thing. If he is in the hands of the Russians, which I happen to believe, I don't have specific proof, but I think it's true based on the kinds of things we've seen from the beginning, he's a disgusting individual. Now, I think the second worst person in the world, of course, is Mitch McConnell, because he has basically eschewed any responsibility, as has been suggested in the letter, from holding the president accountable. Look, I mean, I think that's the job of the Senate to do this and the House to do those investigations.
Absolutely no backbone when he says that I'm not going to put forward anything the president won't sign. Like, why not? Like, you know, why not come up with a better counterpoint? I mean, I think with the shutdown, one thing that I failed to see from any of the sides, whether it's the president, the House, or the Senate, is how to better use that proposed $5.7 million.
So there is an article in the Washington Post this morning saying McConnell's hands-off approach to shutdown carries risks for GOP colleagues. At what point do the GOP colleagues start to talk and say something to their leader?
Well, you see, that's the beauty of it. They will talk. They will say privately to a reporter who will report it, I don't like this. I think this should be solved, and I think we ought to be doing something. But they will elect McConnell, and they will support McConnell, and that's the job of the leader. We have in New York State a similar situation where Carl Hastie, the speaker, is carrying the same kind of water for the legislators who don't want to cut their outside income. Now, they'll tell you, oh, no, I don't think that's right. But they still raise their hand and they vote for Hastie. So I think that's the important thing.
McConnell has had great success by not doing anything. He's restructured the Supreme Court and the federal judiciary. I think he's doing exactly what he planned to. I don't think it's pressure from his voters. He has nothing to gain by ending this strike.
Well, actually, Rosemary, he's going to run for office another time. He has to be perceived as being in the corner of the president. I have to say, I know I'm going to get mail on this, and I apologize in advance, but for the photographers the other day, they made him smile, and that was actually worse. So what can I say?
As Rosemary said, I agree with everything that's being said. McConnell has nothing to lose by ending this shutdown. I don't think Donald Trump has anything to lose by not ending the shutdown. I would really like to see the Democratic leaders who had just come off a historic victory. I mean, we've just come off a historic victory at both the state and federal level in terms of Democrats getting elected. I want to see them use their limited airtime to start promoting their strategy of how to end this. And all too often, they're using their airtime to talk about who's to blame for it. I just don't think that's a productive way to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm. So in other shutdown news, this just in, Nancy Pelosi is asking the president to reschedule the State of the Union address because of the partial government shutdown. In a letter to President Trump, Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker, said, quote, sadly, given the security concerns and unless government reopens this week, I suggest that we work together to determine another suitable date after government has reopened for this address or for you to consider delivering your State of the Union address in writing to the Congress on January 29th.
Well, that's the way George Washington did it.
That's the way it used to be.
Yeah, he went up there and they mistreated him and he said, I'll never do that again.
Okay, all right, let's talk about Pelosi for a minute because there is one of the most powerful women, if not the most powerful woman in government. And what has she been doing? She's standing firm on the shutdown because she's in a confrontation with Trump. I don't think she's blaming him. I think she's playing him. And now she's using her power to take many of her rivals, women and men who wanted to challenge her for the speakership and voted against her, and she is keeping them out of committees, off of committees that they want to hold. The Sicilian in me really likes that. I admire it. But the citizen in me is thinking that's not the way to run a government.
Well, you know, Rosemary, just for the sake of clarification, she is keeping people off the committees that they want, but they're brand newies. And so...
No, that's not true.
Well, some of them are. Some of them are. As you know, Cortez certainly is, and she wanted to be, I believe, on the Appropriations Committee.
Cortez actually voted for her. That's not one of the people she's getting seeking revenge.
Well, she was doing
her
a lot of
help. These are people who spoke against her, like Rice.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
And she's not a newbie at all.
Well, I'm so sorry, Rosemary. I am right about that. She did keep Cortez off, and Cortez was going to vote against her and then turn around and said, okay, I'll vote for her. But in any case, speakers have always done that.
We're also living in a different time with social media in that people like Cortez do not need a committee assignment to have power. She
How about Stephen King? Does he
She has
one?
An enormous amount of power just through her advocacy on social media without even being on a committee. Stephen King is a whole different story. I mean, he's using his airtime to be racist.
Steve
and
King?
Do you want to go to that?
I was just going to say Steve King as opposed to Stephen King, so people don't think we're talking about the author.
Yes. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't see him doing anything that's really constructive or productive with the time that he has on social media, so I wouldn't put him in the same category.
You think she's doing something productive?
Well, I think that I just think that she has a very large voice and a very large following.
Yeah, she does.
And whether you agree or disagree with her policies, she's standing firm on them, and she's advocating in a way that could be argued is just as powerful as being on a committee.
And in fact, a recent analysis of tweets in the United States, who has the most tweets and the most followers, she is by far the leader, almost 2-1 over everybody else, including, I believe, Trump.
Kim Kardashian has her beat by a mile.
I don't think she's above Trump. You're I think funny. He's the leader, unfortunately.
Let's go to Samantha, who says, Sherrod Brown. I had the honor and pleasure to meet Sherrod Brown when I was campaigning for Obama in Ohio in 2008, and I've been a massive fan ever since. I think he would be a fantastic president, but How do you make up for losing his Senate seat? This is a problem because you certainly won't get another Democrat into that seat for a long time. It's a real heartbreaker. And that's from Samantha in Averill Park, where everybody's a Harriman. What? Okay. Pardon me.
Everybody's a Harriman. Okay. I'm not asking. I don't want to know.
Well, Averill Harriman.
Averill Harriman.
God, Averill all your Park? References are from like the 50s.
I've been saying. Yeah, that's where I was there. In the 50s, I was there. Ed from says Brexit, Putin, and Bannon. To Rosemary's excellent point that the current chaos in Western democracies directly benefits Putin. The original leader of Brexit demagogue Nigel Farage was hosted at Trump 2017 inauguration with great fanfare by Steve Bannon and company.
Yep.
Bannon, meanwhile, continues to circulate around Europe to this day, stirring up right-wing nationalism, many of whose groups are allied with Putin. And that's from Ed from Delmar.
He is right.
And then we heard from Bill, time to stage a walkout. Thanks for the great show, as usual. It's worth remembering the GOP had 2 years to fund the, quote, wall, and they couldn't do it. Trump was all ready to go with the $1.3 billion till Limbaugh and Coulter took him to task. This shutdown is all Trump's stupidity. Air controllers and TSA workers are being forced to work without pay, must stage a walkout, and stay out until the government is reopened. But that's not, even with your feelings about the TSA, Rosemary, it ain't right to make them go back and work for free.
It is not. No, that is slavery. I don't advocate that even for people I don't like.
Dawn,
right.
I thought you might fall for that.
No,
but you didn't.
No.
Too bad. Okay, and Daniel says, scoundrel. 50 years from now, when someone is referring to a traitor, they will no longer invoke the name of Benedict Arnold. The traitor will be called Donald Trump. Well, you know. That may really happen, depending on what Mueller comes up with. If, in fact, they do find he was playing footsie with the Russians, that could be a good definition of traitor.
I think it might happen anyway.
Do you think that Mueller sits at night? I'm sorry to keep interrupting. I'm not here for very long.
No,
I have
to make up for that.
Do you think that he sits at home and worries about all the times and all the millions of people who keep saying that? Depends on what Mueller comes up with. We have to wait for Mueller. Let's see what Mueller. That's a big burden.
You know, there's a big burden on the guy. You're exactly right about that.
It seems to have been, but he seems to have been aware of it. And the steady hand that has been there so far seems to indicate that he's not affected by it, right?
Mm-hmm. We don't really know.
And Mark writes, I'll repeat.
He may be on like 5 Valium a day. We don't really know.
Mark, we don't know anything. You can say anything like that. He could be dancing on the moon.
All over from stress. Yeah.
Well, Mark says, I'll repeat.
Join the club.
You state Putin is dancing in the streets. Steve Bannon and Robert Mercer, it says Mercer, but you may mean...
Robert Mercer,
are playing the music. You can't separate Trump from this event. You're so right. Bannon and Mercer's role in Brexit is well documented, going back to 2015. It has been touted as a testing ground for the Trump campaign. Back in 2015, Brent Bannon, who was then the vice president of Cambridge Analytica, an American firm largely owned by U.S. hedge fund billionaire Robert Mercer, was in the loop on discussions taking place at the time between his company and the leaders of Leave EU, a far-right nationalist organization. Please open your eyes, from Mark. Susan says, Gillibrand, I wouldn't vote for Gillibrand for dog catcher. She drove Al Franken, the best and brightest, out of the Senate without due process. She should have picked her battles, by the way. I used to really like her. Susan from Clifton Park. That's Susan from Clifton Park.
I think the Al Franken story will come up throughout her
campaign.
Well,
I get that mail all the time. All the time.
Well, you know, here's the thing. We have you. You specifically criticized her because she flip-flopped. She used to have a gun under her bed. Now she's a gun control advocate. On Franken, it was the opposite problem. She was extremely rigid. She didn't say, oh, this is really weak. There's the material, the evidence here is questionable. It was like, no, he did it. He's accused. He has to go. So what is it that we want? What is it we want from our leaders? Could we as voters kind of give them a clue what it is we'd like from them?
I think you take some liberty with my words. I was just pointing out what Gillibrand had done. I wasn't critiquing. There's one more, Joe. Or we don't have time, right?
Go ahead.
Good morning, panel.
Jim's doing the news today. Ray's off, so he's not so as... Speaking of rigidity.
Yeah. As others have noted, Marcy Wheeler, inter alia, Mueller has been leaving a remarkable trail of breadcrumbs embedded in the details of every public charging document he's filed since the beginning of his investigation.
Bon.
Or for a better analogy, he has been placing a seeming inchoate collection of kaleidoscope tesserae. Whatever, which will resolve into a coherent pattern when viewed from the edge of the tube. The prospect of a Mueller shutdown grows even more moot with the latest affidavit concerning Manafort, William Barr, or anyone else protecting brotherly admiration of Bob, in quotes, notwithstanding, and that's from Victor. Oh, and there were some more.
I don't think he's leaving clues at all. He's writing complex and very well-written legal briefs, and then they get redacted when the press asks for them, and so it appears to be little clues and pieces of mosaic, but he's writing amazingly complete and damning indictments.
By the way, we have an incorrect letter from Linda from Hurley, who says, Alan, I have to disagree with you. Two men on the ticket will turn off a lot of women. Don't start dissing any candidate, especially the women. I'm glad Rosemary stood up for Kirsten G. Linda from Hurley, wait a second now. I, in fact, in my commentary this morning, talked about her as a potential vice presidential candidate, and I think that might happen. So take it back. And Ellen says 200% about Trump. However, the only thing that has changed since he won the nomination is how low he has taken the country. If we the people can't do anything other than complain, if we aren't able to demand that people we voted for office do something to rid the White House of this deadly fungus, then Trump and his cronies are our new norm. If he lasts until 2020, we will look back and think of today as being a better day. And finally, David says, hello, panel. So nice to hear Rosemary. Trump's mode of operation is chaos. The best way to resist is to continue with our civil duties, stay informed, be compassionate, and vote at every opportunity. That's it, Joe.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. 8 minutes past 10 o'clock, a reminder that Governor Andrew Cuomo will be on with Dr. Alan Chartok coming up at 10:40 this morning.
You can call me Alan.
I will.
He calls me governor.
Yes.
I don't like it. I mean, he calls me doctor.
That's true.
He calls you the good doctor.
He doesn't call you Al.
What a Freudian
he did call me
slip
Alan
that was.
In the
just
beginning.
Al.
What'd you say?
He said he calls me governor. Is that a Freudian slip?
It was a Freudian slip. I've always wanted that job.
Yeah.
Okay, so back to, it took us an hour, but let us get back to Alan's point from an hour ago, which was all of the other stuff that we didn't get to talk about. So let's talk about the Barr hearing that took place yesterday and what we get out of that. William Barr vows to, he vows to do something. My login for...
Well, we can tell you what he vows.
Yeah, he vows to let Mueller finish the investigation, right?
Right.
We know that.
Check.
And he said it's in the best interest of everyone that the special counsel Robert Mueller be allowed to finish this investigation. He also pledged not to allow the president to, quote, correct or put spin on Mueller's report before it was released publicly.
Check. Mm-hmm. Check.
He was rude to the women questioners, and I think he wants to put reporters in jail.
I watched the whole thing, or most of it, and I thought that he was extremely effective. And when they talked to the Democratic, some of the Democratic senators, they said they were going to vote for him. Because remember, it could be far worse. Take a look at this guy, Whitaker. What a clown. Mm-hmm. And that's the last guy you want in there. I think he was... I see what you mean, Rosemary, when you say he was rude, but he would answer in one-syllable words.
I mean, it was very interesting to watch this hearing and comparing with the Kavanaugh hearing, which was the last time that we saw someone in this position.
And the same players, the same committee, yeah.
Exactly. And some similar, some different questions, you know, to what Rosemary said about journalists as a journalist, that was a little the question of whether they could put journalists in jail if they go too far was a little disconcerting, but excuse me.
Salute.
Thank you.
Health.
So there's a lot to unpack with this.
Well, he's a very extremely experienced lawyer, and has extensive experience in the Justice Department and working with the FBI. The real question is...
He was the Attorney General.
Yes, right. Yeah. But the real question is, will he stand up to this president?
Or was he lying? Or will the president fire him for doing what he said he was going to do?
Well, I think this president is very capable of doing anything at any given time. It's completely unpredictable.
He's no Elliot Richardson, and that's who we need right now. Mm. Yeah. I'm glad Chuck Schumer is going to vote against him.
I think he's going to be approved.
He'll be approved.
Unfortunately, that's true.
But, you know, I think it raised the question, too, of, you know, what's the most important task at hand for this role, and how will he choose to execute that? I mean, I know there's a lot coming on in the courts and stuff, but I think, you know, is he capable? Yes. Is he what we need right now? That's another story.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's also interesting that you're manning up the Justice Department, which is important, but yet we still have a government that is basically shut down. And so are we going to have this sort of justice style of government where it's all about law and order, but yet we're going to let people stand in food lines and suffer health care and all the other indignities that are happening right now? The whole thing makes no sense.
I think Alan is right. He was effective, but it gave me no comfort. He said that he would seek out the opinion of a department ethicist, but wouldn't necessarily go along with what they recommended unless he agreed with it. That sounds like a dictator. He did say yes, he was a friend of Mueller's and would allow him to continue. But he made very clear there are other ways to mute what Mueller's work ultimately is. He could keep the report secret or...
Well, he said he would. He would not.
Well, no, he was extremely shady and evasive on that, Alan. He said that he would... Graham asked him, would you release as much as possible, which is conditional. Mm-hmm. And he said, I will release what's allowed by the regulations.
Well, Rosemary,
I
thought about that. You're exactly right. One has to decide, first of all, was this guy lying to us or not? I don't think he was. I mean, I don't think he's
that
kind of guy.
No, I think he was telling us outright.
Yeah, but put reporters when he said, in jail, as much as the law allows, I'm sure there are conditions under which he is not allowed to release sensitive classified material, right?
Yep. Correct. Yep. But he didn't, he didn't say that. Perhaps that's... what makes me uneasy. If he had said, for example, if there's classified information, I'll be remiss. I won't put it in. If there is, I can't think of any other circumstances. Okay. Actually, okay. I'm faltering here.
Okay, I accept what you've said, because you know I'm not exactly what you'd call a Trump fan, and I keep asking myself, why in hell did he appoint a guy like this who sounds so good, who took so many differences of opinions with Trump? Why did he do that? Why did Trump do that? very hard to know the answer to that question.
And he is a holdover from a period that has really long passed. He's a holdover from the Reagan and Bush years. And, we just desperately need to get people in that have more recent experience and that represent the population of the 21st century.
But you can't have that.
And he was cognizant of that, though. I think he did bring up, they brought up policy decisions that he made up in the 90s. And, he said that was a different time. This is a different context. So,
but he's of that time. And so I'm just not sure how capable he is of making the transition. But, he's going to be there. And I think the bigger question is, how is Trump going to deal with it? And how is he going to deal with Trump? And
I think there's no mystery why Trump picked him. He has written extensively about how he thinks Mueller's idea of collusion is wrong. He is the architect of mass pardons during the Iran-Contra scandal that involved his last presidential boss. He is deferential deferential to presidents and believes in great executive power, all of which are so important and appeal to our president.
Anything Trump can use to help bolster his message that he is innocent, did nothing wrong, and that there's nothing wrong with this shutdown is going to be to his benefit.
Okay, a couple of more letters. In addition to keeping topics you all discuss, could you pronounce people's names correctly?
No,
I read it to you.
I didn't
read it out loud to everybody else.
Transparency.
It seems you've never listened to Keir Stin-Gillibrand. She pronounced her name Keir Stin, not Kirsten or Kristen. In all her political ads over the years, whether she introduces herself, she pronounces her name Kirsten. I think she deserves the respect of pronouncing her name correctly. Please don't attack me for making a reasonable request in a polite manner. Be civil. Y'all are very thin-skinned when a listener points out a mistake. That's from Bobby.
Bobby, you've had a bad experience with radio commentators.
Either that or she's being unfair. John says, Trump, good morning, gang. What Trump wants above all is our attention. The best way to get his attention is to ignore him. Let's focus our attention on his band of enablers, McConnell and company, and that's from John. And then finally, good morning, panel. Don't feel bad, Alan. I caught the Harriman reference immediately because I grew up downstate. Really great to hear Rosemary again during this latest visit back home, and that's from our friend Nurse Carol. Thank you.
All right, let's go back to other stories. And so we did talk about Kirsten Gillibrand. I assume no more on that. Kirsten Gillibrand. Let's talk about Steve King. Republicans rebuke Steve King, but face the vexing question, as the New York Times points out, which is, why not sooner?
Or why not actually criticize their president, who continually says and does things that are way more extreme than what Stephen King is doing, although what Steve King is doing is awful too. But I hate the idea that the Republicans are using Steve King as a way to somehow seem as if they are, what's the word I'm looking for?
Caring.
Yes, that's it. Right. That's
not racist.
And by the way, they're getting away with it.
Yes.
Oh, look at what we did. We took this terrible racist and we kicked him right on his rear out of there. Meantime,
but you
not such a good idea to have people voting all of the time. We want to make sure that, we protect the voting process and do all of that, which is just as racist as anything you could possibly do.
Yeah, it's subversive and backhanded the same token.
Yeah, but the president, when confronted, we have to be fair, and they said, what do you think about this guy? And he said, I have been following.
Really brave stand.
Who is that? It's just inexcusable, really. I just, that to even give them airtime to criticize him and for them to refuse to criticize his president, to me, is just inexcusable.
And at the end of the day, I think, what happens next? So he can't serve on committees. Well, I mean, he's failing his own state in that regard because it's an agricultural hub. And guess what? He doesn't have decisions on anymore. But if you unseat him, he goes to a special election. Who's next and what will they do? But, I think the New York Times asks a very valid question. But at the same time, it's a double-edged answer in that, you could pose that question to many other people in many other contexts.
Yeah, we've had many congressional members that have said similar things or far worse things over the course of history. This is not an unusual occurrence. We haven't had a president of the United States that has taken such aggressive actions against his own people in a very long time. And the fact that they're not holding the chief executive of our country accountable and they're focusing all their attention on one congressional person to me just seems completely unfair and uneven. And
yet, on the other hand, I'm so glad bad things are happening to him.
Yeah, well,
he richly deserves it.
Yeah. I agree. And I'm glad that they are holding him accountable. But the measures just don't equate with the reality of how the government is operating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd highly recommend anyone to read the editorials in the Des Moines Register, the Sioux City Journal. They both took the stance of, step down before you dig yourself in your pool. So.
Interesting. So do you have you changed your mind, Alan? Do you think he'll end up resigning?
Well, based on his impertinence, I suspect he will not. His egotism and his narcissism will keep him where he is. And he's going to say, well, I keep getting reelected. That's the thing.
Yeah, he's just a mini Trumpster. Yeah. And he's going to stay there until the people force him out, just as this president, I think, is going to stay there until the people force him out. I mean, the people are going to have to take control of our country and force this guy out.
Or as I said yesterday, the Justice Department forces him out and finds something he did. That's really bad.
I think the interesting question that has been brought up too is that at the end of the day, does this break any law? Will any law be changed? If you say these things, then, you can be unseated. I don't know.
We have just a few moments. I do want to get to another story, which is breaking, and that is the suicide bombing in the U.S. has confirmed that American troops were killed in a blast in Syria. Mm-hmm. 15 U.S. troops killed in the Syrian attack, which has been claimed by the Islamic State. The suicide blast was the first such attack since President Trump said American forces would withdraw from the country because the militant group has been largely defeated.
I hope this is not the crisis that we've all been dreading that sends our military and our government into even more chaos. This is going to really test this presidential administration's ability to lead our military.
Well, and I think in this case, too, it's interesting, we hear that ISIS is claiming responsibility for this, but that's not been confirmed. But with the shutdown, we're missing key parts of our intelligence and data sharing. And so this is another effect of the shutdown. And my condolences to anyone who's a family member of troops over there.
Mattis was right. That's all I have to say.
And what? Just to clarify.
An incredibly rapid pullout, unannounced and unprepared for, of our military from Syria, and I'm in favor of not being in Syria, was ridiculous.
It's so hard to get inside Trump's head, but you know what he's thinking. He's thinking, okay, you Democrats, you always say bring them home and bring everybody home. I'll give you a dose of your own medicine. I'll do it. In his own mind, I suspect that's what he did.
Yep.
And I don't think he wanted to talk to Mattis or to anybody else about this because it was impetuous.
Well, he was talking to Erdogan, and he wanted to one up the Turkish president and promote his own policy of being nice to Saudi Arabia, which Erdogan had been going after, and this was his way to accomplish all of that. And it was ill-conceived, badly prepared for, and it cost him someone who actually might have pulled this off in the correct way.
Well, Trump always looks for the nearest platform that he can stand on to spread his wings and say, look at what I did, whether you agree with it or not. And I'm very worried that what he's looking for now is a way to start a war. And he may very well use this incident here to stand on a platform and say, all right, time for me to push the button. Oof. And that's a terrifying thought. But I think this president is out of control. He needs to be removed from office as soon as possible.
As Mueller gets closer and closer and closer, wagging the dog is absolutely something we can expect to see.
Well, the dog is wagging.
Oh, God, now I'm getting hives.
All right. We're going to end it there. Reminder, we're going to so first of all, thank you all for being here. A great pleasure. Yeah. Terry Gibson, Rosemary Mayo, and Jen Smith. Thank you very much. Alan will be back at 10:40. We'll be interviewing Governor Andrew Cuomo. Before that, we'll go to the Congressional Corner after news. We'll do all of that right after this.